So welcome to tonight's class, which I called Efforts versus Results, and I could have given it a much more negative name, which really puts into focus why today's class is important. The title could have been, What is the point of effort when you don't produce results? Now, I know in school, it used to be marks were all about results, and people would say something very true, that in the real world, when you go out there, it's results that are going to make the difference. But later in time, they started to include comments about effort. But then you have in certain jurisdictions on this continent where they put so much focus on effort that results are diminished. So, for example, they have this concept called creative spelling in some jurisdictions. If somebody decides to spell incorrectly, so be it, etc. And, of course, people can ask that as a question. Now, for us, as it relates to us, this is a very real question. If I put in so much effort and then there are no results, then it's just like I'm useless. So what is this all about from a Jewish point of view? Well, we go back to the old story that I'm telling probably for the third time within this month. So I'll do it the truncated version. Rabbi is giving advice to a couple who can't stand each other at this time. And she says her complaints. The rabbi says, you're right. Then the husband goes along, all his complaints. And the rabbi says, you're right. The Rebbetzin sticks her head into the door and says, how could they both be right? And he says, you're also right. This is a very important story because, Jewishly speaking, on multiple levels, we live the coexistence of many contradictions, which is the norm for us. So effort versus results, where we are headed today is to demonstrate that the value of effort is not just in results, but it has intrinsic value. And that is because, as we're going to demonstrate through this class, effort is a result. Now, what does that mean? Maybe that can sound poetic if you wish, but what does it mean that effort is result? So that's what we're going to do, and we're going to elaborate on all of the above. We're going to start off with a fantastic video. A person in Australia, if you have not seen clips of him, then you're in for something really special. He was born with no arms and no legs. And his byline is, no arms, no legs, no worries. They don't say no problem there, they say no worries. And we're first going to watch a clip about 4.5 minutes, which the purpose of my message is not going to be merely the messages that he gives to the various audiences in this promotional clip of his. But I'm going to extract from the intro and ask a very cold-blooded question at the very end.
I wasn't ready.
I have no arms and no legs, but I'm very thankful that I have my little chicken drumstick here. People freak out when they see me for the first time. It's so cool. I was at a water slide all by myself. Everyone obviously at the bottom of the slide is looking up and waiting for other people to come down. And here I come and they're freaking out. They're like, you know, like this. And I was so tempted to look at myself and go, what happened? You know? There were times where I sort of looked at my life and thinking, well, I can't do this and I can't do that. And you keep on concentrating on the things that you wish you had or the things that you wish you didn't have. And you sort of forget what you do have. And there's no point, I believe, in my life where I wish I had arms, legs, I wish I had arms, legs, I wish I had arms, legs, because wishing won't help. But what I've seen in life are just a couple key principles. And the first thing that I've seen is to be thankful. It's hard to be thankful, man. I tell you, when I was 8 years old, I sort of summed up my life and thought, I'm never going to get married. I'm not going to have a job. I'm not going to have a life of purpose. What kind of a husband am I going to be if I can't even hold my wife's hand? It's a lie to think that you're not good enough. It's a lie to think that you're not worth anything.
Woo! It's freezing, I can't feel my hands.
I love life. You know, so many people come and say, how come you smile so much? And I'm like, well, it's a long story. But it's very simple at the same time. You see, it's very hard to smile sometimes in life. There are things that happen that you don't know and you don't understand, and you don't know if you're going to get through it. You know, you go through your storms in life and you don't know how long this storm is going to be. And today I want to share with you some principles that I've learned in my life that you can use in yours. Being patient is beautiful. I tell you, it's the hardest thing. But I realize I may not have hands to hold my wife's hand, but when the time comes, I'll be able to hold her heart. I don't need hands to hold her heart. You know, it is scary to know how many girls have eating disorders. It is scary to know how many people are just angry at life because of their situation at home and angry at others. It's scary to know how many people actually feel like they're worth nothing. Every single girl right here, right now, I want you to know that you are beautiful. You are gorgeous just the way you are. And you boys, you're the man.
On this DVD, I share my experiences in life of how I've overcome challenges and seen a new, fresh perspective in life. To be thankful, to dream big, and to never give up. I speak to children, youth, and adults about key issues and principles that I've applied in my life that has given me the strength to conquer all that comes before me.
I said I'm going to have a cold-blooded question after this video. What's the big deal that this fellow with no arms and no legs could do all these things that he could? Yes, of course, it required so much effort. There's no question about that. At the end of the day, all he's doing is living a regular life. You see, I'm posing the question this way and showing this first because intuitively, we look at this and we're in awe and we say to ourselves, well, if he can overcome this, what can I overcome? And what I'm trying to agitate here is, let's examine how we look at effort, and let's examine how we look at results, and we're going to walk away from here differently, because for one thing, my question, what's the big deal? He just accomplished a regular life. Intuitively, any person knows that could not be right, and maybe I don't know how to articulate it, so I'm going to go inward and see what is actually the explanation, or maybe I'm just going to dismiss the question. That's just a ridiculous question, because obviously the effort means a whole lot, and we're going to get into that. Now, there is one point here that relates to all of us. See, here is a person who, with all these deficiencies, through a sequence of events, he made a decision that he is going to, nevertheless, be a somebody. Now, many times in previous classes, and throughout the years, we point out, Jewishly speaking, that everyone here is here for a reason. It's often hard for a person to admit that to themselves about themselves. So it is interesting. This is actually a side point that I'm stating now, but it runs very deep, so I'm mentioning it. It is interesting to note that this individual was convinced that he's here for a purpose and he's going to find his way. And somehow, because of his handicap, it's special, we're going to get there. So let me transition that to you and to me. So let's say I have a particular handicap or a laundry list of them. Somehow, intuitively, there must be, if I'm going to parallel myself or contrast myself with this individual, there must be some way that I can deal with life and, like him, not exclusively change all my handicaps. Maybe some of them cannot be changed, just like he can't, and still have a meaningful life. So this runs a lot deeper than just an analysis of effort versus results. Having said all of that, where we intuit in this story that efforts must mean something, although the results are just, I'll say, regular, I'd like to share another story now. And in this story, it's going to apparently contradict the point that we're making. Nevertheless, as Jews who are living contradictions throughout, it is going to be this very contradiction that comes in the next story that is going to guide us on our understanding and our personal view of ourselves. So, years ago, when the fifth Rebbe, meaning the father of the previous Rebbe, was the Rebbe, Rebbe Sholem Dovber, known as the Rebbe Rashab, there was something which happened from time to time. There was an edict, there was an attempt by the Russian government to make it that in order to be a rabbi, one had to have a university degree. Now you might say, well, what's wrong with a university degree? And right there, that's off the topic. Even though this is a slight digression, I feel it very important to make this point. The minute a secular government starts giving opinions about our religious life, it is definitely a slippery slope that will only end in the worst places. And there's too much history to prove it to even inject any now. And this is not under communism. This is under the Russian Empire, the Russian Tsars. Now, the Russian Empire, absolutely enormous and very powerful. So there was a meeting. There was a meeting in wherever it was. Maybe it was in Moscow, or maybe it was in Petersburg. Actually, it was in Petersburg. That is correct. It was in Petersburg. Today it's called Petersburg. It used to be called Leningrad. Petersburg was the capital. And the meeting in Petersburg, they called rabbis from all over the Russian Empire to discuss this matter. And they said to the rabbis, if you don't accept this requirement that rabbis must have university degrees to be a rabbi, then we are going to make 101 pogroms. Now, that's not an historical exaggeration. That is exactly what they said. And, truthfully, from the point of view of governments throughout the world, that was no big deal because, as a point of history, most pogroms, such as the Kishinev pogrom, which is the first pogrom that made it to newspapers around the world, which is why it's remembered, it certainly was not the worst pogrom. It was not one of the smallest either. It was 3 days. But the way it happened is the government simply says the police are going to be off duty for the next 3 days in Kishinev. Of course, that's code for let's have a pogrom. It's sanctioned by the government. It was like when there was a pogrom in Crown Heights, and no matter how many times you call 911, or even telling the police, no matter what it is, there was still a pogrom in Crown Heights. Somebody got murdered. What I'm trying to say is that when they said to the rabbis, there's going to be 101 pogroms throughout the Russian Empire if you don't agree, they meant business, especially since life didn't mean much to them. I don't know how much it means to them these days, the government, and certainly it didn't mean to them anything, let alone a Jewish life. So what are they going to do? So different rabbis spoke in the meeting. During this meeting, there was also seated some people from the government. The Rebbe Rashab said he would like to speak at the end. So a number of rabbis spoke in different ways. And then the fifth Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, said as follows. I'm giving you just a synopsis as it relates to this story. He said, only Jewish bodies are in exile. The godly soul of the Jew is never in exile. No non-Jew and no non-Jewish authority can have any say about the Jewish soul. And therefore, he said to the people there, let us all, he spoke very strongly against this law, even though it was a matter of life and death. He said, let us all be ready to have Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh means self-sacrifice, to allow ourselves to die rather than to accept this decree. And he fainted. With such strong words against the government, which I only gave you the highlights, he was placed under house arrest, which means in the hotel that they were staying and convening, he was told that he could not leave his room, etc., etc. There was another rabbi there, and his name was Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, known as the Briskerov, not a Hasidic rabbi, but someone who he, along with his descendants, have been extremely sympathetic and at different times helpful to Chabad Lubavitch. There are many stories about that. This Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, he went to see what's happening to the Lubavitcher Rebbe in his room, and he saw that the fifth Rebbe was crying. So he said, Lubavitcher Rebbe, that's how he addressed him, Mir haben alles getan, was mir haben gekannt. Jetzt darf der Eberstetan. This is, I'm pretty sure from memory, this is the exact word for word Yiddish, which I'm going to translate, as told by our Rebbe on more than one occasion. And our Rebbe was very particular that if ever a story he told was not heard directly from his father-in-law, the previous Rebbe, he would say so. If there were any questions about the exact wording, he would say so. So this wording is pretty exact. And it relates to our topic, as we're going to see right now. Lubavitcher Rebbe, says Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the Briskerov, we have done everything we can. Now it's up to the Almighty to do something. To which, if somebody's unmuted, and I'm going to take care of that now. Hang on a minute. Okay. To which the Rebbe Rashab answered as follows. He said, there are two types of people involved in a business. You have a worker, a very good worker. They come on time, and they never leave early. They do their job exactly as is required of them, and then they go home. To this worker, obviously nobody has any complaints. What happens when he leaves his place of work? Then his mind goes elsewhere. He doesn't think about work until he goes back to work the next day. But then you have somebody who has ownership of this business. I didn't say who is the owner, because there can be multiple owners. And also, in figure of speech, it's very important to say somebody who has ownership of this business. He also comes on time. Sometimes he comes early. He doesn't leave early. Sometimes he leaves late. And he works very hard. But even when he is out of the workplace, the business is on his mind, because to him, the results make a difference. It's not good enough that he did everything he could. The results are important. Now, before I continue explaining how this contradicts the point I made with the previous video, I would like to share with you all that this story from many, many years ago when I heard it in a recording from the Rebbe, until this day, it haunts me. Because the point that the fifth Rebbe was making is, it's not good enough to say that we put in all our effort, and in this case, the readiness to give up our lives. In fact, I forgot to mention in the story that as soon as the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Rebbe, finished speaking, this Reb Chaim Soloveitchik stood up and said, I am in total agreement with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, which meant that he was ready to put his life on the line, also knowing about the government authority who was sitting there at the table. So he was saying, the fifth Rebbe was saying, that it's not good enough to put in all the effort, because then you are, quote, just a good worker. But if you have ownership of the Almighty's plan, that even though you've done everything you can, you can't live with yourself because the results have not happened. So in this case, what we're seeing in this story is, we're seeing two things. There's a level where effort apparently should be considered, but then you're less than, you're just a worker. And then there is a point where there has to be results. So to bring these two together, I'd like to bring us to a story that I told last week, and I told it in, not last week, 2 weeks ago, concerning circumcision. And this time, I'm going to tell it. I did look it up, and I'm going to get the details correct, which Rebbe it was. And this relates to where we are in the narrative with our forefather Abraham, which is, of course, as you can see, Insights for Living, based on the book of Genesis. That's where we are. In the book of Genesis, we have a story that we already told last time and spoke about circumcision at length, that Abraham is 99 years old. God says, you need to circumcise yourself, and that's when you're going to have a child. You're not going to have a child when you're uncircumcised. And that's what Avram does. So this week's Torah portion begins, Vayera Elav, not this week's Torah portion, the Torah portion where this narrative begins, it begins saying, God appeared to Abraham in the plains of Mamre while he was sitting at the opening of his tent. Now, we're going to go into some details. Why are we sitting at the opening of his tent? Why is that important? But here's the story that happened. This same Rebbe whom we spoke about, the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Rebbe, he was a little boy. And one year, he comes home. I don't remember if the Rebbe pointed out his age, either 4 or 5 or 7 or 8, somewhere around those ages. And he was crying, and he went into his grandfather, who was the third Rebbe at the time, the Tzemach Tzedek, and he said to his grandfather, why did God appear to Abraham and God does not appear to me? I want to jump ahead a little. Our Rebbe points out from this story that there's a tremendous insight besides everything else, because we're told stories by the Rebbes not just to tell what happened inside their home or inside their situation, but there's a lesson. If there's no lesson, they wouldn't tell the story. So that even somebody who is very young in age, and let alone somebody who is older, but they consider themselves scholastically young, Jewishly young, whichever way you want, that it's still possible for a person to expect of themselves to have a yearning, to have a relationship with God, to be connected with the Almighty. And if I remember, I'm going to be asking a certain question from all of you to think about towards the end of the class, and I hope that you will reply either on the group or privately. I don't want to insist on answers now because you should have some time to think about it. And I just have to put it in my notes at the end. I'm sorry. And here it is. Question. Okay. All right. So, the Tzemach Tzedek, his grandfather answered him, saying that when a Jew who is a holy man, a tzaddik, he's 99 years old, I'm interjecting, meaning to say that he's righteous for so many years of his life. Continue the quote. Still concludes that he has to circumcise himself. He is worthy that God should reveal himself to him. In other words, when somebody is my age, your age, even if you're 150, doesn't make a difference, or you think you're 5 years old on some level, at whatever age you're at, it's okay to still come to the conclusion that there's some unwanted aspects of my character that I should refine. And here I'm going to interject. Let's say this fine point, minutiae of character that you're refining, affects no one else. Why bother with it? It goes back to our question. What's the point? Is there really a point in effort? And yes, Jewishly, I'm saying to you that there is intrinsic value to effort because effort is accomplishment. We're going to explain that as we tie all of this together. So what we're seeing here is that even though Avram was 99 years old, he still came to the recognition that he always has to put in effort of personal refinement. How many people would be agitated by Abraham if he behaved the way he was before the circumcision? Nobody would be agitated by it. But he still insisted on personal refinement. There must be an accomplishment in that. So what I would like to do now is to show what is involved in effort in this narrative. Now, you don't have the Chumash in front of you. I've already mentioned in a previous week that because we're on Zoom, I just don't know how to do it in a very good fashion to put words on the screen, and it should come across well. So I'm just going to tell you the story as it is. He is in his third day of circumcision. Now, on another occasion, I explained that when we do not have hygiene the way we have it these days, then circumcision, along with other surgeries, always was extremely painful, and the most extreme pain was on the third day. This is till about 100 years ago when hygiene was discovered, and there's medical reason for it. I just want to say as follows, as a section of a quote from a story that I heard from a member of the Xhosa tribe, that when they do in Africa circumcisions in the bush, then on the third day, he's just telling me without any agenda, he says on the third, they're not allowed to take any medication or anything. They're not even allowed to wear anything. there's only certain leaves they can eat. You can actually read up about this and see about it, not the X-rated part, on YouTube. So this is not a secret. On the third day, he says, you feel so in pain that you feel like killing somebody, but you don't have the energy. This is very important for what we're going to say now concerning effort. Listen to this story. Abraham is on the third day after his circumcision. And there's someone else that you may know about. His name is Yishmael, who is 13 years old at the time. And he also was circumcised on the same day as Abraham. So listen to this story. Abraham, he wants to invite guests because he would like to tell people that there is a God in the world. And he sees that there are three people. They look like people, at least to him. One looks like a businessman. One looks like a sailor. And one looks like, now I'm forgetting, basically three Arabs is what it looks like. One was a businessman, one was a sailor, one was something else, I forgot. Anyway, they're walking towards him, and it says here in the narrative, he runs out towards them, bows down as they do in greeting, and he says, please come to my tent. I'll give you some water. You'll wash your feet. You'll stay under the tree, and we're going to prepare a meal for you. Obviously, they couldn't pull it out of the fridge, kind of 4,000 years before refrigeration. And after I've given you to eat, you know, then you'll be able to go on your way. And that's exactly what they did. Sarah went right away, and she made three measures of flour. And then it goes on to say as follows. When Avram went to the cattle, and he began the preparation, meaning he slaughtered them, and then he gave them to Yishmael to prepare them. Now remember, Yishmael is 13 years old, and he's suffering, probably like Avram is, along the lines of those people who do circumcision in the bush in Africa of the Xhosa tribe, and perhaps there are others as well. And nevertheless, after the food is prepared, he gives them to eat and so on and so forth. Then the story continues about a blessing that Sarah should give birth to a child by this time next year, and Yitzchak is born. We're going to leave that part out because it's not about, that's not what it's about. You see, the Torah tells us all of these details, and you might say, why is it necessary to give us all these details? I specifically included three measures of flour because corresponding to these three measures of flour, we have three matzahs at the Seder. This story tells us about effort. Somebody who's just been through that type of a procedure, God would forgive them if they were not looking for people to bring into their tent. Why did he want to invite guests? Well, we spoke about that last time. A couple of weeks ago, he wanted to tell people there's a God in the world. You can't just tell people there's a God in the world. Or just put a sign outside your door. You're not going to get many people following you that way. He decides, well, the way to get to a man is through his stomach. And that's how he did it. You know, the Kiddush and the Shul, etc., etc. Although I'm going to inject something that I'm very, very pleased to repeat. In all the years we have been here in South Surrey, I have heard time and time again from people, and you know that Simi's a great cook, so it's not about quality of the food. You know, given her level of food presentation, we almost never serve stuff just from the bakery if we are putting something on, and I'll just leave it at that. But I've heard time and time again from people who've come to Shul Shabbos saying, you know, stay for the Kiddush, things like that. Rabbi, I don't come for the Kiddush. I come here to pray. And I think we understand that most of the people in our shul are praying in English, not in Hebrew. Some of them, as many times as I'll say it's necessary to verbalize the words, they're still praying with their eyes for years and years. And I just leave them alone because that's their devotion with the Almighty. So that's just an interjection because I want all of us to feel proud that we belong to a community. When I say this to other Chabad rabbis, they don't believe me. They'll say, I've never heard such a thing in my life. And here in Little South Surrey, we have people with spiritual sensitivity who will say, I don't come for the food. I come to connect with the Almighty. I come to Daven, which is something which makes me humble. Because don't forget, I was born into this. So therefore, what's the novelty? I'm just doing the way I was raised. So just letting you all know some idea of the impressions you can make on other people that you may not have thought about. So I'm not apologizing for that digression. I think we should be proud of elements of our community over here. So coming back to the story, he wants to tell them there's a God in the world. and he puts in all the effort, even under such suffering, in order to do it. Why does the Torah tell this to us? Because there's a question we could ask. We could ask, what's the big deal if this first fellow we saw with no arms and no feet, and he put in all that effort to become, quote, normal, unquote? You might say, well, it's tremendous. He gives a lesson for all of us. He gives hope for all of us. You can say all of that. But you can say in his own life, what's the accomplishment? In fact, a number of years ago, when I was watching his videos, I did see on one particular video that he was engaged to a certain woman. Obviously, by her choice, she showed the ring he had bought him, etc., etc. I haven't checked for this presentation where they're at now, but that's pretty amazing. But you'd say, well, why is that amazing? He got married. Many people get married. What's the big deal? The Torah is telling us this story, amongst its many, many messages, is effort does make a difference, even though, as the Rebbe Rashab said in that story that I told, that if you're a good worker and you put in your effort, then you go home and then it's off your mind, and that's okay. But if you have ownership of God's mission, then if the Russian authority gives 101 pogroms, which they didn't in the end, because they saw they couldn't break the rabbis. But even if the Russians give 101 pogroms, as they said, and even if those who oppose are executed and it goes through, God's mission is still interfered with, and that's just not good enough. And now I'd like to tell you this story, but it's going to sound completely different. The same story with Abraham, because what I pointed out here was physical effort. Now I'm going to share with you the spiritual effort involved in this story, and it's absolutely remarkable. I do believe that at least one or two or maybe three of you who are here have heard this before, but that's okay. Because what I'm going to share now, I heard it a lot more than 20 years ago. And it's another one of those lessons that I listen to on a recording, and it drums in my head over and over and over again. It's really, it's astonishingly real for us to hear its message. So here it is. Imagine, I told you the following story. You know, I was born young enough to have so much of my life to see the Rebbe, to be at his talks, to even have had private audiences with the Rebbe, to have received things from his hand, like a Tanya. Actually, Tanya was through the secretary, and to receive dollars. Even was fortunate to bring some of my kids to him when he would pass out wine, to receive cake from his hand, all sorts of things like that. But in 1994, the Rebbe passed away. Now, let's just assume for a minute that somehow I got a phone call from the next world. Now, I don't take any illicit substances, so that would not be the reason. Let's just assume for a minute that it's very real, that the Rebbe says to me in a dream, tomorrow at 3 p.m., I am going to meet with you for 15 minutes. During those 15 minutes, I'll answer any question that you have or any advice that you have, I will give it to you. And especially those of you who have heard the story about the Rebbe and our daughter's wedding and the date, when the Rebbe says anything, it involves miraculous stuff. And we've seen it on the videos as well. Now imagine if I said to the Rebbe, and I'm going to pick on a particular neighborhood which today does not live up to its reputation of the past, but I'm going to use it anyway. Imagine if I said to the Rebbe, I cannot see you tomorrow at 4 o'clock because I have to go to Harlem. Now, today, Harlem, there are some very upscale residences there. But early on in our lifetime, Harlem was a place that if you had skin color like mine and you walked through Harlem, chances are you would not necessarily come out alive. That's the real fact. So let's suppose I said to the Rebbe, if I cannot meet with you tomorrow at 4 o'clock because I have to go to Harlem and talk in a public school to tell those students that there is a God in the world. Rebbe says, well, if it's not tomorrow, then it's not happening. And I'd say, Rebbe, I'm sorry. We're not going to meet tomorrow. Imagine that. Now let's make it a little further. We know that Elijah the prophet, there are some great people who have merited to witness encountering Elijah the prophet. The prophet is going to notify us of the coming of the Mashiach. Imagine Elijah the prophet came to me and he said the same thing. Tomorrow, 4 o'clock, I'm going to tell you the secrets of the universe. But it's 15 minutes and it's got to be 4 o'clock only, no other time. And I said, Elionovi, I would love to. But I've got to go tomorrow to Harlem to tell them there's a God in the world. Imagine if God Almighty came to me and said the same thing. Now, before I continue with the story, I want to interject with a real story. There was a boy in the neighborhood of Tzfat several hundreds of years ago, and one day he literally had an encounter with Elijah the prophet. Elijah the prophet came to him and said, I was sent here from heaven as a reward for what you did on the day of your bar mitzvah, which was so significant that I was told to teach you the secrets of the universe. But I'm only going to share those with you if you tell me what you did on the day of your bar mitzvah. And this individual said, what I did on the day of my bar mitzvah, I did for the Almighty and for no one else. So therefore, I am not going to tell you, even if it means you're not going to continue being with me. And with that, Elijah the prophet disappeared. When this individual passed away, they said, wow, what are we going to do with this individual's soul to do something so selflessly for God? You see, this story I'm interjecting within that story is because, again, it's about spiritual effort. And you might say, well, so who gained from his spiritual effort of having total anonymity for the goodness that he does? There should be zero ego possible involved, even in looking back. Who gained anything by it? What was the accomplishment? And yet in heaven, they just saw this accomplishment of effort, spiritual sacrifice. And they said, we have to do something really special for this soul. And therefore, we're going to send him down again. And he is going to come in the form of a person who's going to be born to a woman. And he is going to spread the inner wisdom to the world like never before. And this story was told by letter to the Baal Shem Tov from one of the great mystics of his time, telling him why he needs to make those teachings public from which came the movement of Hasidus. This was a reward for the soul. It gave that soul the merit of taking God's inner wisdom and publicizing it throughout the world. So this is about spiritual effort. So now let's go back to our story, our hypothetical story. God says, I'd like to meet with you 4 o'clock tomorrow. I'm going to tell you the secrets of the universe, God himself. And I say, God, I can't meet with you because I have to go to Harlem tomorrow at 4 p.m. to tell him there's a God in the world. This is what happened in this story. What happened in this story is, it begins by saying that God appeared to Abraham. And Vahine, all of a sudden, while God is with Abraham, he sees these three Arabs. And I'm paraphrasing Abraham right now. And he says, God, I need you to wait a minute because I see three Arabs walking down the street and I need to tell them that there is a God in the world, which means I'm going to invite them in, help them wash their feet from the sandiness and whatever idolatry they may have worshipped with their feet. And I'm going to prepare for them food and hopefully I'll be able to tell them a few words about that there is a God in the world. Until then, sorry, God, I cannot talk to you. So this is a story not only about somebody at age 99 with whatever tremendous agony one has with a circumcision to invite these guests, he's even ready to say to God, I don't have time to be with you, God, because I have to tell the world that you exist. What does that tell us about effort? Okay, so that seems to be further confusing because on the one hand, the fifth Rebbe says, doing all you did, all you could is not good enough. It wasn't accomplished. And here we're seeing how significant it is to have just the effort that it's recorded in the Torah for this way. And of course, the answer is as I said at the outset, because both are imperatives that do not cancel out the other, because at the end of the day, as we are going to see, effort is accomplishment. Let us go to the next story, which takes the life, it begins in the life of the Alter Rebbe, and then it continues in the life of the second Rebbe. There was a certain great rabbi, I do not remember his name. And he was, besides being a great scholar, and realized that in those days, to be a scholar for us scholarly Jewish people, because the average religious Jew is a veritable scholar, They study every day, every nighttime of their lifetime. So it's very hard to stay ignorant like that. So to be a rabbi, you really have to be a scholar, and there's no Google. So the Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, the first Chabad Rebbe, calls in this rabbi, and he says to him, I want you to become a balagola. Balagola means a wagon driver. Now let's understand what it means to be a wagon driver. A wagon driver, in order for him to earn a living by driving people to be a so-called taxi, needs to not only grease the wheels and fix the wagon when it's broken, but they need to take care of the horses and their fleas, you'll excuse me, and their manure, and all those things that I don't know are involved in harnessing a horse and the smells and et cetera, et cetera. Now, a person who all his life is thinking about Torah, and the Alter Rebbe says to him that he sees for his soul that he needs to be a wagon driver. So he knows enough about the Alter Rebbe that he's not going to argue. He's going to do what he needs to be done. But the difficulty of doing so, the effort is just enormous. So what does he do? He goes the next day where the taxi lineup of wagon drivers is, and he asks them, could you teach me how to be a wagon driver? And they all start laughing at him. He goes to the next, until finally one wagon driver has pity on him, says, look, I'll show you how to be a wagon driver. And he shows him how to grease the wheels, how to take care of horses, all of that, how to figure out routes, etc., etc. He becomes a wagon driver for many, many years. And if I dare say, this story, on a certain level, is perhaps the most important story you are going to hear, even though every single story I have shared today is rock-solid important for every one of us. This perhaps might be the most important. And the Alter Rebbe said to him that, to be a wagon driver until I tell you that it's not necessary anymore. Wow. Anyway, what happens? He continues to be a wagon driver. Just to give you a time of history, Napoleon invades Russia. The Alter Rebbe is fleeing from Napoleon, and along the way he passes away. So that's the era in history we're talking about. And this rabbi is still a wagon driver. One day, he's taking a certain individual, and the individual says to him that I need to leave early in the morning at this and this hour. And this individual, he prays, not just praying by, you know, because he prays every day, with great, great devotion. And in the morning, this fellow is getting ready to go. Where's the wagon driver? He sees the wagon driver is so steeped in his prayers that this individual, who happens to be Jewish, is so moved that he continues with this wagon driver. And he asks him about how can I was born Jewish and I was born religious and I went off the beaten path and I became such and such and such and such. How can I get back? And this wagon driver helped him become a Baal Teshuva. Baal Teshuva means somebody who is involved or is master of returning to God. Baal means the master of or in the arena of Teshuva, returning to God. I know people say repentance. Repentance, if you look at the dictionary, means regret, which is only one of the three elements of Teshuva for another subject. Teshuva means to return to God. And in the course of this narrative, he brings this Baal Teshuva, fellow who becomes religious, to the Rebbe, the next Chabad Rebbe, who was Rebbe at the time, who was the Mittler Rebbe, the second Rebbe of Chabad. And the second Rebbe of Chabad meets him. The Mittler Rebbe, his Hasidic writings are the deepest, many of them, are the deepest writings of Hasidus of all of the Rebbes. Very difficult to understand. One of the Rebbes, maybe it was the fifth one or the fourth, I don't remember, who said, whether it was figurative or literal, it's irrelevant. He says, "Mein Haar ist gekrochen vom Kopf, wenn ich habe gelernt Imre Bino." Imre Bino, which is a book he wrote for a very intellectual fellow called Rabbi Kusil Leffler, great, great chassid of the Alter Rebbe, then the second Rebbe, so deep that this Rebbe said that my hair was falling out of my head studying this book. So even if it's only figurative, we understand what that is. We're talking about a great mind. So this Friedrich Rebbe wrote a booklet of about maybe 50 pages, maybe a bit more, in Yiddish, so this fellow could understand. guiding him how to return to God, how to become a Baal Teshuvah. I have to tell you, it's very, very moving the way it's written, very inspirational. In my youth, I studied it many, many times, not because of the depth, it's very straightforward, but because of its inspiration. So the Mittler Rebbe, even though he was such an intellect, could speak to this fellow on the very basic level. And he says to this wagon driver, he says, you no longer have to be a wagon driver. And that's when he stopped. In other words, the Alter Rebbe saw that this rabbi, to fulfill his soul's mission, his primary mission of his life was one encounter that would happen many years later. Even after the Alter Rebbe's death, the Alter Rebbe foresaw this, that he would meet this individual, and his mission was that in the state that he was, by his being pious and his prayer with devotion, he should awaken a Jewish soul to come back to his Father in heaven, to the Almighty. So in this story, what are we seeing? So many years of effort, and apparently the accomplishment came many years later. So even though I haven't answered the question, I am pointing out that even though we're going to explain that effort is accomplishment, the reason I said that on a certain level, this story is really perhaps the most important story of this entire class, it tells us that we can go through a whole lifetime to help one person. In fact, the previous Rebbe said this aphorism, and it is included in the Book of Daily Thoughts by our Rebbe that he published in 1943, saying as follows, that a soul can come down on this world for 70, 80 years just to do a favor, a material favor, or especially a spiritual favor, for another person. Material favor means just basic materialism, because the other fellow's materialism is your spirituality. You become a refined person in helping God's purpose along through the physical. So now let us put it all together, because I'm going to show you one very strong video with which we will have some closing remarks. Here is the explanation. The reason that effort has intrinsic value, and the reason I say, or Judaism says, that effort is accomplishment, and even more so, Jewishly as individuals, while it is true that we are judged by what we've accomplished, we are judged even more so, and in many, many instances, exclusively by our effort. Why is that an accomplishment? Because let's go back to the first video we saw. And I asked the callous question. This fellow from Australia, he says, no arms, no legs, no worries. And we look at it intuitively. We know this is just, there's something remarkable here. What's remarkable here is that he has demonstrated that personal refinement can go so far to the degree that even someone without arms and without legs not only makes a life for himself, but is one of the happiest, most optimistic people that you will meet. In other words, God's plan is not only for you to accomplish in the world outside of yourself. Yes, that too, which we are going to talk about and have talked about, accomplishment. But from your point of view, it is important to know, it is important for me to know, that given the gifts that I was given, and given the gifts that I was not given, given the circumstances I was placed in, and given the circumstances that are absent from my living, God wants me to refine this body of mine. Remember, the soul never went into exile to begin with. Only the bodies are in exile. And the purpose is for me, through using my mind, the freedom to choose good from evil, my purpose is to refine myself even more. How much more? We look up to this Australian fellow. I'm not saying his name because I don't know how to pronounce it without getting it wrong. We look at this Australian fellow and we just are in awe of how much personal refinement he had. Would anybody Would anybody blame him if he was a bitter person? Or I'll say it, tried to commit suicide. Would anybody blame him? Nobody would blame him. Yet we look up at that level of personal refinement. Yes, that is in and of itself an accomplishment. Even if videos were not invented, even if he could not get his message around. How fantastic is that? We take a look at the next story of Reb Chaim Brisker saying to the fifth Rebbe, we did all we can. In other words, we did give it all our effort. And this is the part that still haunts me. Because sometimes we try to make things happen. We try, and I'll say this with double, triple entendres for those who understand. We try to make it so that we are going to meet God at the mountain and rehear as new the Ten Commandments. And we put in so much effort. And we could say, I did all I could. So I'm okay. I did all I could. Comes the fifth Rebbe and says, if you have ownership of God's plan, it's going to hurt you. And that's how it should be. So I think you can understand that this haunts me because it's very difficult to live on the level of the fifth Rebbe. But as our Rebbe pointed out countless times, including when telling this story, that these stories are told because they speak to even people like ourselves. When we hear the story of the little kid who eventually became the fifth Rebbe, and he's crying, why didn't God appear to me? So what does his grandfather, the third Rebbe, say? But before we say what he said, our Rebbe interjects and says, even a child, figuratively or literally, can and should aspire to have a connection with the Almighty. What does it do for other people? That's not the proper question. Your refinement on this world, even if nobody knows about it, or like the story of the soul of the Baal Shem Tov when he was just an individual anonymous in Tzfat who would not tell Elijah the prophet what he did on his bar mitzvah, his accomplishment was that he wouldn't even allow his ego to feel satisfied that he could tell Elijah the prophet and therefore receive the secrets of the universe. Instead, it was only for God. That was the level of his refinement. So his effort was accomplishment. So now coming back to what the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Rebbe, said to the fifth Rebbe as a child. When a Jew who is 99 years old and he's a holy man and he still realizes he needs to circumcise himself, he's worthy of God revealing himself to him. In other words, we could look at our own character and like Avraham, well, none of us can compare ourselves to Avraham on that level, but what we can compare ourselves is, who's going to care if I have a little more refined speech? So for example, our Rebbe did not like the phrase a deadline, you know, a deadline, because it has the word dead in it. He would say due date. Who's going to notice if I say due date and I don't say I have a deadline? Instead, I'll say I have this project due by such and such a time. Who's going to notice? God is going to notice that the body that God gave you is now more refined than it was yesterday. Who says it's only about accomplishing of other people? Your effort is accomplishment for the refinement of that body of yours. And then we get to the spiritual effort of Abraham. Of course, Abraham understood that his mission is to tell the world that there is a God. So he says, God, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you now. I got to tell people there's a God in the world. And yes, even though I have all the excuses in the book. I mean, I just had a circumcision 3 days ago. And other people in the bush, when they have circumcisions, they're so weak. They feel like killing somebody, perhaps, and have no energy to do it. But I have to tell people in the world there's a God in the world, so I'm going to get up and do it. And even my 13-year-old boy, the father of the Arabs, Yishmael, who has this merit, that he did get up and help in the effort. And the same thing is with this one who the Alter Rebbe said, you become a wagon driver. So what happened to all his Torah study? I mean, when he's baling manure, he's not allowed to even think about Torah study. But nevertheless, he became such a refined person in which way? That his whole life was at one with his mission, that one solitary Jew who had left the fold should be inspired by him to come back. So therefore, I would like now to bring us to the close by showing a 2.5-minute video of our Rebbe, which literally brings us together, and this is also a haunting one. The visuals are just the Rebbe speaking. They do have subtitles. I will put the link on the group for those who are on the phone where you could see the subtitles. And this is the Rebbe speaking in advance of him having a stroke, in which he actually sets out his mission statement for what is to happen after he leaves this world. That's right, you're going to see it on video. And the Rebbe says that I have done everything that I can. Let us remember, the Rebbe is, at this age, 92 years old, that you're seeing him. And, I'm sorry, he is 90 years old. That's right, he passed away, he was 92. He had a stroke which would not allow him to speak for 2 years. He could answer yes or no with head movements, and that's how he answered many questions. And eventually that was not possible either. So, this Rebbe, and everything that he has accomplished the world over, the Rebbe says, I've done all I can, but I've not accomplished, because Mashiach is still not here. As the Rebbe stated countless times, thousands of times, that the entire purpose, obviously, of history is to go from creation to receiving the Torah on Shavuot, which we did 3,332 years ago, a few days ago, to bring this world to the coming of Mashiach, every far-flung corner. So with that in mind, again, I'm going to do the screen sharing, and if it's something is not coming through clearly, please, one of you, volunteer to interrupt and let me know. This is very, very important, because the Rebbe was very much into using technology for God's purpose before anyone else, making use of television through Hasidim who don't have television at home, literally. And I could go on and on of that subject. The Rebbe saying these things knowing very well that he was heard at that very moment simultaneously all over the world, and made sure that it was videoed so that it would be promulgated around the world. So with that in mind, I'm going to share the screen. I'm going to see what the Rebbe says. I'll close with a few remarks. And
then verschrieben geworden und der Bible bleibt uns und Rachmanus Islam ist der Recht, dass der Heim Bernard soll noch nicht kommen, Moschiach, und sie sagt, dass soll ich morgen soll noch nicht kommen, Moschiach, und übermorgen soll nicht kommen, Moschiach. Und mit Schreitag und mit Eitam soll schreien, laut Mose, und Hulu, immer wohl geschrien mit der Nemes, und wohl gemeint mit der Nemes, ist eine sichere Sache, als Moschiach wohl schon lange gekommen, zusammen mit der Gula, mit der Schleimer. Was ich kann noch tun, und du weiß ich nicht. Weil im Alter, was ich so getan, bis ist er in der Hevel, weil er ich sie gar nicht verreisen von mir, geblieben in Golus. Und was noch mehr, wenn mir geblieben mit der Gol in den Golus, bin ich mir echt, wenn er geht, zu Avedes Hashem. Und komm ich drüber, kam er vor mir. Mir wird eins gesagt, was ich kann noch tun, ich gebe das lieber jeder von euch und tut alles, was ihr kennt und seht, der Robling in Moschiech und denke von Yad Mamosch in der Leben, die in Jönnen, sage ich von Eris, die Teo, aber den Kehlen, die Tichun, und wie hier Rotsen, als Sorkel, so, sollen sich die Fiene zählen, nicht, was wollen sich einnachschen und sagen, als sie muss nicht sein, weil der Nebischen ist, dass der Dämmert ist das Amt Scheere für, wie so lacht, so lave Nenu, hat es Hen und Machaltonu, ist eine sichere Sache, der Nebischen wird darauf bringen, der Gula Amit ist was Schlimmer, denke ich von mir an Mammos und auf mein Meiser, was sich noch tun in dem, auf zu gern machen, jeden von euch auf ein Schlich, auf Zdoke und wie hier Rotsin, auf die Gichabogert und alles, was ich kenne und wie kann Ulle Habe, tut alles, was sie kennt, wie hier Rotsin, also unser Gefühlen zwischen euch, Alkoholponen, eine, zwei, drei, was soll da nicht zu geben, was wir soll tun, was sie soll tun. Weil wir hoher Icke, weil man soll echt viel und soll sein, denke von mir an. Mama schon mit der Simcha, wir tun wir wohl.
So the Rebbe, as I said, knew very well the technology that was being used. None of it was used without his permission or instruction. And the message is really for every one of us. Just because you may have such and such an opinion of yourself, every person is here to take this world on a mission from creation to its ultimate purpose, the coming of Mashiach, which amongst the many things means no more war, no more violence, which is very timely to hear right now. And that's why we are hearing this message. So here the Rebbe is saying, I did everything I could. I don't know what else I could do. And therefore, I'm passing the baton to you. He didn't say baton. I'm using that word. But he says, I'm passing it over to you that you should be stubborn to fulfill this mission. And since the Rebbe's passing, as we know, the influence of Chabad around the world has way more than doubled, not only in size, but in impact. And it's not a party of braggadociousness. It's just about this point that the Rebbe said that from his point of view, and I'm quoting what he said from the fifth Rebbe, that if you have ownership of the mission to bring Mashiach, then I'm not satisfied until Mashiach is here. And therefore, I feel like what it's all been in vain. But at the end of the day, Jewishly, the effort really does count because that is who you are becoming. So now we've heard what the Rebbe's mission is. So effort versus accomplishment, the answer is effort is accomplishment. Our job is effort in order to accomplish. How much we accomplish, God decides. When God decides that we should not accomplish, if we want to raise ourselves from the level of being, quote, just a good worker for God's mission into ownership of God's mission, then it should trouble us that the mission is not accomplished. So this is very profound, very deep, and I have shared with you personally how there are two elements, and now this last one has been the third. These are elements that actually haunt me in what we endeavor to do out here in our community. I do hope that this is going to make a significant impact on all of you.